So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Gentlemen, welcome once again to the Ed Springsteen Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com. And man, have we got a show for you. I tell you what, there's always something to talk about. Big news today, apparently the Catholics have decided on yet another pedophile priest, Pope to be elected. And we'll give you some details on that in just a minute. In the meantime, hello, Mr. Gillespie. How are you, sir?
How you doing, my friend?
Man, I'm doing great. I don't know any other way to put it. You know, it's always fantastic when you come up with so many things to talk about that you never have to shut your mouth. And for me that likes to talk, I tell you, man, you can't ask for better days than days like today. You know, we're going to get into a lot of issues tonight, but we've obviously got to mention the top one. The new Pope was selected, or elected, if you will, just a couple of hours ago. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I heard that it was from Argentina. I was kind of pulling for the Irish-American Pope myself, being an Irish guy and it being close to St. Paddy's Day. But I heard there was black smoke, which meant 1,400 days without a budget. Isn't that what that means in our Congress?
Well, you know, yes. That's exactly what it means in our Congress.
So I don't know too much about the Pope. I'm an Irish Protestant, so you'll have to take that up with Martin or something. I don't know too much about this Pope guy.
Well, you know, actually, there's actually a lot there. But anyway, the Catholics have elected, the Cardinals got together, like they do whenever they select a new Pope, and they elected...
Oh, Cardinals.
They elected Cardinal...
Not those Cardinals, okay.
Cardinal Jorge Mario Bergoglio, excuse me,
bless
of Buenos
you.
Aires. Of Buenos Aires, he's been elected the 266th Pope. He took the name of Pope Francis. He is the first Latin American Pope to lead the Church, and he's also the first Jesuit priest. So we have the new Pope now, so that mystery is solved. But I tell you what's really interesting is, you know, the reason we're in this position in the first place. Pope Benedict was the first Pope to resign in 6 centuries. You know, he resigned, obviously, he says, for health reasons, and we know he's in some kind of health situation. However, what's really interesting about this is the real reason Pope Benedict resigned, in my opinion, and the opinion of so many more people, is quite frankly because his papacy, if you will, is mired in such controversy, from hiding priests from prosecution for sexual abuses around the world. Pope Benedict has decided he's going to stay in the Vatican, and according to Vatican sources, the reason he's staying there is because, quite frankly, it's absolutely necessary. That if he leaves there, he's going to have a big problem. He could be arrested. His personal security is at stake, his safety, since they don't have a Secret Service to protect him. The Vatican police are going to be able to guarantee his privacy and security. They're not going to have to worry about foreign police coming on Vatican property to take him and hold him accountable for his failures and his leadership, I guess, if you will, for hiding pedophile priests. So that's the real story, folks. For you people that are Catholics, you know, you want to get mad at me, sorry. But we deal with the truth on this show, as always. Yep. And, you know, that's just the way it is. So it's going to be interesting. From what I can find so far in this new cardinal that just became Pope Francis, you know, he pretty much is well-liked around the world. So all indications are that this guy is going to be a complete opposite of Pope Benedict. The last cardinal I liked at all, actually the last pope I liked at all, was actually Pope John Paul II. So, you know, this is going to be interesting going forward. We'll see what Pope Francis brings to the plate. But hopefully they'll be able to get the church cleaned up for all you Catholics out there, because quite frankly, you know, I would be embarrassed to call myself a Catholic, even though I was born and raised that way. So that's one of the big stories. Dale, I tell you what, before we start getting into Kentucky education and everything else,
yeah.
I know you've got some great news for the young Republicans. Why don't you just go ahead and share that with everybody?
Well, I know that you kind of teased it last night, and I wasn't at their meeting. I really have. I stayed away from the meetings ever since I was the chairman myself 10 or 11 years ago. But the good news is Andrew Schottner, who is a Liberty guy, was elected last night as the new – not last night, I'm sorry, Monday night. My days are running together, not getting any sleep. And Andrew Schottner was elected on Monday night as the new chairman of the Louisville Young Republicans. And I can tell you, like I said, as a former chairman from 10 or 11 years ago, that he will be wildly successful if he can continue to focus on Liberty and avoid all the neocon influences like the well, we won't name any names, but their initials are people like Shelley May and John McCarthy and those kinds.
Well, I'll agree with you, actually, because I know James Young. James Young used to be very, very close with one of the most ridiculous guys I've ever heard of in my life, John Brewer. They worked together in a house race a few years ago. James Young, to me, has been nothing more than a whiny-ass titty baby, as long as I've known him. He's been nothing more than somebody who will kiss anybody's butt to get ahead that he can. He doesn't know anything about hard work or doing the right thing. Now, he's out there. He's already whining to WFPL and some other media sources, saying that the only reason he was not reelected – now, remember, he was just elected last year. He's had 1 year to prove himself.
Yep.
They've been telling everybody that will listen to him cry that the only reason he wasn't reelected is because he went on record supporting Mitch McConnell. And, you know, he went public on a radio, a WFPL radio program, supporting Mitch McConnell and things like that. So it made everybody angry because nobody likes Mitch McConnell. Well, for one thing, Mr. Young, I've got to tell you this straight up. Mitch McConnell is running unopposed for his election. As a young Republican, you're supposed to back your candidate. So I don't believe that for one second that everybody was against James Young for that. However, there have been some stories coming to light. One of the biggest of which is that Young was trying to push a bylaws change that would allow the young Republicans to give endorsements during primaries.
Yep.
That has never been a party way of doing business. You do not endorse in primaries.
No.
That is not the party's job. So what he was trying to do was force people to endorse in primaries, allow the young Republicans to endorse in primaries.
Well,
just
problem,
in case,
yeah,
Mitch McConnell got an opponent. Go ahead.
No, what I was going to say, the problem I had, this goes back to my time in the Young Republicans, and keep in mind, in full disclosure, I was a former chairman of the Little Young Republicans. I was a former third district chair for Young Republicans. I was a former state officer for the Young Republicans, and also got the Lifetime Achievement Award from the Young Republicans. So I know a little bit of this group that I speak, and I can tell you that it was very frustrating in a way, because they do want you to always back the party candidate. And the thing is, they'll say that, but again, we've seen how this works out. If it's a Thomas Massey or a Rand Paul, they just wink, wink, nod, nod, just coincidentally don't get the same support if it's a Trey Grayson or a Mitch McConnell. So that's always been a little uneasy. I wanted them to change the rule a long time ago where you can at least endorse in a nonpartisan race or a race where there's no Democrat presence. And I think I haven't seen the Constitution. I know that I helped write the State Young Republican Constitution 10 or 11 years ago. I don't know if they ever changed it. But to me, at least at the very minimum, I've talked to this to our friend Michael Lewis, at the very minimum, when there's not even a Republican running and there's a Democrat independent, you'd think that we'd get behind the independent. But as we've seen, the Republicans and Democrats, or what do we call them together, Ed?
The Uniparty.
They get together, and they usually don't want anybody running as independent. So, you know, I would like to think that if you were a non-Democrat who the Republicans want to claim as their sworn enemy, which we know they're not, it's like Jesse Ventura says, it's professional wrestling. We put up a fight on the screen, and we go out and hang out together and drink afterwards. I would like to think if you were not a Democrat, you would back the independents. So to make a long story short, you know, it's taken them forever to even say you can endorse a non-Republican in a race that doesn't have any Republicans. So I don't know about the endorsing in a primary thing. I think that's just asking for trouble.
Well, and I totally agree. And that really is truthfully one of the biggest problems, you know, because as a party, you are supposed to stay neutral during primaries. As a unit, as an organization. Now, individually, even when you were the president of the Young Republicans, mm-hmm. individually, you could pick whoever you want to pick. You can campaign for them or do anything else. But as president of the Young Republicans, you cannot endorse anyone.
Well,
everybody, of course, has
a
right to make up their own mind.
Right,
well,
that's about that. And like I said, in a way, they also had a rule. If you got to November, let's say it was one of these races, and I've drawn attention to these races with people like Michael Lewis and our independents, which we have only one independent in the whole state legislature. Let's say it was a Democrat and independent running in November and no Republican, which, as we know, it's the party, the county and state party's responsibility to get candidates. So let's say mm-hmm. the county or state party failed to do their job, which is get a candidate recruited. You cannot even go out as Dale Gillespie, non-YR chair. I was not even quote-unquote allowed. I mean, if I wanted to do it, I guess I could have fought with him. I was not even supposedly allowed to go out and endorse an independent if there was no Republican in the race. So that's where it gets a little ridiculous in these
Well, that is ridiculous. I totally agree with you. I mean, if you don't have your own candidate in the race, then as an organization, you should pick somebody who's going to closely mirror your views. And that means if you've got to endorse an independent, go ahead. You know, I totally agree with that in the general elections. But in primary elections, I don't agree with anybody trying to pull an endorsement.
Right.
All that is,
you're right.
All that is people like Mitch McConnell or Trey Grayson buying political favor. You know, and I've got to be honest with you. There's been a lot of questions nobody will go on record with. I certainly will. But there's a lot of questions about James Young's pure intentions and motives anyway. It always has been.
And see, I don't know much about him more than what you told me. I just know that Andrew is a far more liberty.
I'm talking to Andrew, a far more liberty-oriented
candidate in that race, and like you said, he had only been in there for 1 year. And again, if my thing is, doesn't that tell you a lot about the unpopularity of Mitch McConnell? And let's say for a moment James is right. Let's say for a minute that he got the backlash. I'm not saying I agree in any way, but let's say hypothetically, for sake of argument, that he's right.
Mm-hmm.
If the Young Republicans all voted against him for backing McConnell, who doesn't even have a primary opponent,
right?
What does that tell you for how unliked Mitch McConnell is in his hometown?
Well, that's a good question. That's a good question. I think it's a worthy question, you know. But I don't buy this for a minute. Anybody who's had the privilege, if you will, I guess for lack of a better word, of dealing with James Young on any kind of a level, know better. Most people that I talk to, you know, leadership included within the Republican Party, don't have anything. They don't care for James Young at all. They just put up with him. They look at him as a fly on your picnic basket, just an annoyance, nothing more. And quite frankly, anybody that puts their whole political clout on the backs of Trey Grayson, who is a Democrat, not a Republican, and is a member of the Republican Party, as James Young has done, you know, you've got to question loyalty anyway. So, you know, I don't have much use for him, but to go out there and go public and try to play this game really is the biggest problem I've got, because he's hurting the organization. I think the Young Republicans are our future. I think that they do an excellent job in Louisville overall when they're led correctly. You know, and to sit out there and play this whiny game in a public forum because you were beat because you're not worthy, that doesn't bode well for a lot of people, and James Young is going to suffer for that. So that's one of those.
I think if anything, like I said, I think I mentioned this to our good friend Ed Martin. He and I were having a conversation online last week, and he said that he believes that some of the county elite establishment, whatever you want to call it, county party hacks. Mm-hmm. He said he thinks that they're starting to come around. So I think if anything, maybe that's what we can attest the election of Andrew to the chairman of the Young Republicans. Maybe the Republican Party is starting to come around. They see what Rand Paul's about. I mean, I think the biggest joke, and you'll have to tell me and back me up and tell me if I'm wrong about this, Ed. Do you remember when Rand Paul was first running for U.S. Senate? Did any of the establishment want to be on his side, or were they all backing Trey Grayson?
Oh, no, they were all behind Trey Grayson.
Well, that's what I think is interesting, because if you go over, and I don't want to give them free publicity, but if you happen to go over to the Jefferson County Republican Party's Facebook page tonight before, you know, one of the ones that we know listens to the show, maybe go and change it after we talk about it. But if you happen to go to their county party webpage right now, I'm sorry, their county party Facebook page right now, they're bragging about how much they love Rand Paul. And I think it's funny because somebody called him out on their own page and said, "Welcome to reality, Jefferson County Republican Party. Glad you can finally join us." I don't know.
Well,
what makes that really interesting?
Well, what makes that more interesting, Dale, is even after Rand Paul was elected, not in a primary, but in a general election, they didn't really back him in a general either. And for at least, you know, a few months after he was elected, the general Republican Party, including Jefferson County Republican Party, was chastising him. They didn't have they didn't want anything to do with him even after he was elected because of Mitch McConnell.
But here's the punchline. I don't know who's writing the Facebook post over there at the county party. I don't know, again, if it's the little mole Byron Fisher or it's Shelley May or Cordell Lawrence. I don't know who's writing this. But they wrote back, "Jefferson County Republican Party has been with Senator Paul since the very beginning." So I just thought that was a good punchline. So maybe people are starting to come around, like Mr. Martin said. And some of them, it takes a little bit longer to come around to the truth, if you will. So that's what it takes. I can just tell you that Andrew did work with the Liberty folks in the process last year for those conventions where we kind of got screwed royally. So I'll be curious to see how that works, how they'll warm up to Andrew.
Well, we shall see. You know, Andrew is not just a liberty-minded guy. He's also a Tea Party activist.
Yep.
So we shall see. You know, Rand Paul is a Tea Partier. Andrew's a Tea Partier. You know, so we're going to see how quick they warm up to him, because my bet is they're going to warm up to him pretty damn quick. I know that they didn't warm up to James Young because, like I said, they didn't like James Young. They didn't care for James Young. They just thought he was a fly out there on a picnic basket. You know, I mean, they didn't like him at all. I know many candidates that James Young was supposed to be helping in elections, they couldn't stand the guy. But they took him because they had nobody else to volunteer to help.
Republicans.
So,
yeah, I mean, if Tea Partiers are to blame, according to this story that the public radio station put out, is it WFPL, is that it?
WFPL, yes.
Yeah, if Tea Partiers are to blame, as the quote goes to WFPL, then the way I would look at that is the only requirements for being in the Tea Party is, well, again, if it's the real Tea Party and not the co-opted one, is to be constitutional. The only requirement for young Republicans is to be a registered Republican 18 to 40. So I would think there'd be a lot of crossover between 18 to 40-year-old Republicans and constitutionalists. So if they happen to be young Republicans as well, where's the conspiracy?
Well, it's going to be interesting going forward, definitely watching Andrew.
Right.
You know, I'm kind of curious to see what he does with this situation as well.
Sure.
I don't know Andrew on a personal level. Only from talking to people about him and paying attention to what he's done. And quite frankly, I think it's a good move for the young Republicans. You know, that's just my opinion. And I've got to tell you, too, you know, Rand Paul, just to really touch on it, the filibuster last week and everything else. You know, for a lot of you guys, you really don't know this, but at one time we held this show on WKJK. And when you talked about Rand Paul first starting his race, we were one of the very first. This show was one of the very first to introduce Senator Rand Paul to the Louisville market, and we did so on more than one occasion. We gave Rand Paul all the time we could possibly give him, and there was a reason for that, because Rand Paul does seem to be the real deal. And what's really fascinating, it's not, you know, we're talking about the young Republicans and the local party and all that stuff, Dale, but have you noticed on the national stage how many Republicans are starting to pay attention and stand with Rand?
That's good. I mean, that's good. I mean, if they're coming around, it's like Ronald Reagan always said, you can get anything accomplished if you don't care who gets the credit. If they want to jump on a bandwagon, we know where we were. Nobody can prove for whom they voted, you know, in a Republican primary, but we know we were there from the beginning. And it makes them feel good to be like a sports fan, jumps on a bandwagon when the team's doing well, then that's great. If they'll back Liberty candidates, you know, we saw they wouldn't do that in the conventions last year. They weren't quite seeing the handwriting on the wall yet. So I guess for anybody who wants to kind of get involved in that sadomasochistic activity in 3 years, we'll see how it turns out differently. I'll just say this will be my last comment about the young Republican election. Our good friend Clint Hardy from Kentucky and Grassroots Radio, I'll quote Clint. Clint said that he said, now that Andrew's been elected the chairman of the young Republicans, he said, this is Clint's words, he said it's probably the first time they've had a liberty-oriented chair since Dale Gillespie was the chair. There you go.
Well, that's Clint, too. And Clint always calls it like it is, too, and I got a lot of respect for that. But there's a reason I mentioned Rand Paul and the filibuster and all the other things in one breath, though, Dale, because last week what we saw, and this is where the mainstream Republicans on the national stage is starting to pay attention and come around, because Rand Paul started this filibuster alone. He started this filibuster alone. He said he was going to speak until he could no longer speak.
Yep.
And he started the filibuster alone. And what did we see as time went on? after the first couple of hours, then we started seeing other people step up to the plate, including non-Tea Party, first-time senators that were Republicans. We saw guys get up there. We had one senator, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, that spent like an hour reading tweets to Rand Paul. You really started paying attention when you started hearing this guy read the tweets. This was the first time he had ever spoken on the floor. You saw five or six different Republicans get up to speak, for questions, so-called questions, because that's the only way Rand Paul could hold the floor. You had a Democrat stand up and stand with Rand. You had Mitch McConnell late to the game, but a few hours into this, Mitch McConnell realized which way the wind was blowing, so he even had to stand with Rand. But what was really interesting about this filibuster was it wasn't just a Senate that was standing there, and the Republicans coming in from the Senate. What you saw was the House.
Yep.
You had House of Representatives coming over to stand with Rand. They couldn't speak on the Senate floor, but they were coming over to stand with Rand and support Rand Paul. So what you saw was this conservative movement. All these people who have been sitting back, letting Rand stand alone, realize the historical significance of what he was doing. So now all of a sudden they stand with Rand. There's no way they can go back later and stand against Rand now, because now they've been publicly identified with him. So what is that going to do for Rand Paul moving forward, maybe in the next presidential election?
Well, the gentleman who went to the floor, and like you said, to give it a little context, he was reading copies of tweets, because the U.S. Senate, for better or for worse, has a rule: you cannot have any electronic devices on the floor, which I don't think is a bad rule. You can't have any electronic devices, and you cannot have any drink on the floor except for water. I guess, the late Ted Kennedy's drinks notwithstanding, and you can't have anything to eat on the floor except for some sign of exception for some candy that's provided. So basically, you're on the House or the Senate floor. You have no connection to the outside world unless someone else brings it in to you. And again, you can only drink water. So Ted Cruz was the senator who came in there at the eight-hour mark, and he started reading photocopies, or I guess you would call it just printouts of the tweets, because Rand Paul didn't know about it. He was on the floor for all those hours. And like you said, a few people came in and had some exchange with him, took times on the floor, and we saw our good friend Thomas Massey from the House and Justin Amash from Michigan's House, who may be running for Senate himself. They all came in and supported Rand up in the gallery. So that's probably the first time in my lifetime that someone's done a real filibuster from the Senate floor. Last time I can remember reading about it ever happening was when Strom Thurmond did it.
You're absolutely right. And that's what's really interesting, too, because in most cases when you want a filibuster, you just raise your hand, say the word filibuster, they do whatever they're going to do. But you don't really see anybody actually practice the old-style filibuster. And that was remarkable, because that shows you that Rand Paul not only pays attention to history, but lives, but appreciates and respects history. And I think that's ultimately what this was all about. But it was really interesting to me that all of these people who were against Rand for all this time, what was totally fascinating was the public backlash. The public was watching this live, and these people said, "Oh crap, my political future is probably in jeopardy. I better stand with Rand."
Mm-hmm.
So it gave them the courage to stand with Rand. Now the question is, will they have the courage moving forward to make the changes necessary? We will find out. We're going to take a quick break. I didn't mean to spend this much time on this, but we haven't talked about this, so we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we'll get into some issues. We'll talk a little bit more about education in Kentucky. And I've got to get you to weigh in on this whole Ashley Judd comical mess we've got going on. I know you're going to enjoy that. We'll be back, folks. Phone lines are now open, 858-683-1326, 502-805-0334, or join us in the live chat. We'll be right back. Listen to the Ed Sprinkler Show here at the MVM Radio Network.
Everybody, gather around. I'm here to give you anything you like. You want free college, energy, mortgages, whatever you like. You have come to the right place. Why? I'll tell you why. Who can take your money?
Who can take your money?
With a twinkle in their eye.
A twinkle in their eye.
Take it all away and give it to some other guy. The government. The government can.
The government can.
And who can tax the sunrise?
Who can tax the sunrise?
Who can tax the trees?
Who can tax
government can.
The government can.
And the government can, cause they mix it up with lies and make it all day.
Folks, I just love that song. Comedian Tim Hawkins, The Government Can. You can listen to that song as well as everything else Mr. Hawkins does at timhawkins.net. I've got to tell you, it's very interesting what's really going on. Dale, you know, I spent a lot more time on Rand than I wanted to, but by God, the man deserves it. He's done a great job. But we do have problems in Kentucky that we need to get into. And one of those is Kentucky education. Yes, Kentucky education. As you know, the governor and Greg Dumbo have gotten together and decided they were going to go ahead and raise the dropout age from 16 to 18. And, you know, the governor will be getting that before too long if he hasn't already. He'll sign that into law.
Yep, stupid
bill. I've got some major problems with that. What about you?
I think it's a stupid bill. I mean, it's one of those bills that, again, if people are forced to go to school, what are you going to – I mean, I don't know if y'all talked about it this week or not, but what are you going to do? Force them to stay in school? What's going to keep them from just leaving and – it just doesn't get reported. I mean, if you don't want to be in school, you don't want to be in school. But we know they want them to be in school because of what? The money.
Well, exactly. And we
touched on that. The money they get in tax dollars and revenue for when all the little subjects, I mean children, show up in the public schools.
Well, and
we
touched
subjects.
On
I mean,
that last
Pink
night.
The Pink Floyd video. It's just like the Pink Floyd video. Just turn them out and mush. Mine's a musty.
Oh, sure. And that's the whole thing. We touched on it last night, but what was really fascinating about this for me, is exactly it. One is the money. But what we're talking about is basically 6,200 children. Now, what we need to know is this, folks. You have over 680,000 students in Kentucky public schools. All right? Roughly 221,000 of those students are high school students. At 16 years old, you're in high school. So we're talking about 6,200 kids out of 221,000 kids that are dropping out of school each year. Now, that may sound alarming to you, but in the big scheme and the big picture, that's 2.8% of our students are dropping out of school at 16, okay? The majority of which are troublemakers, truants, and kids who aren't going to do anything when they're there but create problems for the ones who are there to learn. So why are they intentionally doing this, Dale?
Well, no, I was going to say, the reason they're doing it, I think it's strictly for the money, but there's a lot of reasons not to do it. And I would say, number one, top thing off my head I can think of for them not to do it is because I think parents should be making the ultimate decision on their children's education, not the bureaucrats. But also, the bill there's no proof statistically from other states that raising compulsory age improves graduation rates. There's no proof. And the bill will cost us, the taxpayers, $15 million a year. But, yeah, I thought we were trying to balance the budget and not increase our debt.
No. Steve Beshear says this is going to save us millions, but I'll get into that one in just a second. Let's go to the phones real quick. Let's go to the phones real quick. 772 number. You're on the air.
Hey, what's up, fellas? This is me, Short.
Me, Short. How are you, sir?
Hey, long-time listener, but haven't been in a while. What's going on, my fellas?
Not much, sir. What can we do for you?
Well, man, first of all, I like that song you was playing.
I appreciate that.
Man, the government can, man. What an interesting song, man. I like that. You're going to have to give me, you're going to send me a copy of that, man. I'm going to have to play that on the on my program as well.
Tim so, Hawkins, know, we, TimHawkins.net. All those songs are there, and you can download them. That's not the only song he's got. He's a fantastic comedian. He does all that. Yes, sir.
Well, listen up, fellas. You know, you touched on that educational thing.
Yep.
I'm in agreement. Yeah, that, you know, we talked about that on my show today, too. You know, it ain't nothing but somebody trying to get paid. You know, we can't even manage the kids that they drop. They can't even manage the kids that want to stay in school and everything. But we're going to force other kids to stay in school to age 18. What the, you know, that's some crazy stuff. Ain't nothing but somebody trying to get paid and everything. That's my take on that.
Well, what's
but
really
I needed to ask y'all something, man, mm-hmm. you know, because I was thinking, Ed, that you was going to really come to my show today, and I might have should have asked you to come on. But what do you know about that the article that's in the Louisville magazine about the conversation about the effects of what's going on in the West End community? Have you seen that article?
I have not seen that article yet.
Oh, my God. Ed, Ed, what is wrong with you, man? You are missing
I'll be honest with you, Meeshorn. You know, I'm right in the middle of about five different investigations, some heavy ones, including the county attorney's office. I also go to trial on Tuesday. I may go to jail for a year, so I've had to deal with that. There's a lot going on. I haven't had time to check out everything. But, you know, I will check that out tonight now after the show because I want to see it now. You know, me and the West End, I've really got a soft spot for West End problems. Yeah, so I want to check that out.
Well, the article is in the Louisville magazine, and it scares my stuff. But if you can go to Hirschborn, they got they got a few cars. Go to Hirschborn and the Barnes & Noble on Hirschborn. They got copies of it there. So you want to check it out. So that's fellas, good. I would just want to call in. I'm gonna listen to what you got going on and everything, man.
All right, well, I appreciate it, man. Thanks a lot. I'm glad you brought that to my attention. I will check that out. Thank you.
Well, I just say this going back to education bill, Ed. Another thing is if you're gonna have more kids from 16 to 18 who are being forced to stay in school, wouldn't you think? I mean, call me crazy for being kept obvious here, but the kids who aren't in school are right now are the ones you would say are more disruptive, right?
Well, there's no doubt about that.
So if you're going to have 16, 18-year-olds forced to be in school, the government enforcing it, then you're going to have even more alternative or behavioral schools for housing disruptive students.
Well, according to Steve Beshear, our wonderful governor, he says keeping them in school an initial 2 years is a good thing because it's going to help prevent students from jeopardizing their future, and it's going to stop costing Kentucky taxpayers millions of dollars in jail and social services. What an idiot is all
well,
I can say.
What's the difference between the jail that says school on the front and the jail that says prison on the front?
Well, you know,
it's
that's
all state tax dollars. It's all providing free food, free books, free quote-unquote education at my expense. So it's just one and the same. I mean, if anything, this bill passing will potentially lead to more homeschool regulation because you're forcing kids to come in who maybe aren't ever in school. Because who's to say that if this bill passed, then they wouldn't say, okay, there's kids out that are homeschooled that aren't in the public schools, so they're compulsory too.
Well, there's a lot more interesting to that story as well. But let me go back to another phone call real quick. I think this is our good friend Andy Hodges.
Good. Hey guys, how you doing?
Doing fantastic, sir. How are you? It's been a while. What can we do for you?
Well, I've been hearing you guys talk about. I've been doing this terrestrial radio thing with this church. And I'm quite sure Dale has heard of Bale, this Black Alliance for Education.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And they're meeting down in Atlanta right now. Hold on for a second, guys.
Well, okay. That's our good friend Andy, folks. This happens a lot.
This is live radio, that's all.
This man is so busy, I don't even want to try to keep up with him. But let's get back for a second. Andy, just give me a second when you come back on.
Well, like I said, this is Bill.
Yeah, I'm back, guys.
Oh,
I'm back.
Okay.
But I was just saying that this Black Alliance for Educational Choices, now, I agree with the choices part. I'm not big on the whole minority thing. I just think we need to be about quality education across the board. But you guys are just they're trying to get them to pass Senate Bill 176 to allow homeschooling. But the, I mean, not homeschooling, but charter
school.
But I want to see homeschooling. I want to see remote educational options where you can go online. I just don't. I'm trying to figure out. Maybe you got Dale. You're more of a legal scholar than I am. I mean, it appears that the state has assumed some authority in reference to education. It's not an organic authority. Because basically it's a patronage. If it wasn't for taxpayers, they wouldn't be in the business.
No, yeah, it's a big business for them. It's a business with no competition because they don't want any competition. Kentucky is one of just six or seven states that has absolutely no charter schools of any kind. So that's where Black Alliance is really going to be helpful.
Oh, background noise. Andy, I've got to put you back on hold, man.
But I mean, you know, it's going to limit the students. Think about this. What about kids who drop out of school to provide for their family? I already mentioned all these loopholes. You can have kids that are homeschooled, all of a sudden being told that they're truant because they're not in the government indoctrination camp until they're 18. What about the kids who dropped out of school and somehow support their family? You can have a kid, I guess they don't do it anymore. A long time ago, people would leave school early and go into the military and finish their school in the military. I've heard all kinds of stories where people would get their GED while they're in the military. Well, those kids could be found truant now by going into the military. So it's like it violates a lot of principles of freedom and personal choice. You cannot make somebody learn if they don't want to.
Well, that's exactly it, and that's the whole problem for me, because you're not going to make somebody learn if they don't want to. These kids are disrupting the classroom now. You're talking about 2.8% of the total high school population. And what's really interesting here is 6,200 are dropping out a year, but there's over 9,400 that are earning a GED every year.
Yep.
So what really happens here is you've got these punk kids that are 16 years old that think they know it all. They don't care about anything or any adults for whatever reason. Not necessarily their fault. They weren't raised in a proper environment. Blame the parents if you want. I don't care. But the reality is, you know, they're just not ready to be educated and learn anything. But a lot of these kids later, usually a couple of years later, I know a few kids that have dropped out at 16, and by the time they were 20, realized they made a mistake, they went back and got their GED. Our GED program in Kentucky is there for them. When they're ready to learn, they will learn. But in the meantime, they're causing damage and causing disruptions and taking away valuable class time when we've got low-performing schools. Parents blame the schools. Schools blame the parents. Administrators are powerless to do anything about it. And, you know, our legislature is trying to force even more burdens on a system that can't handle any more burdens. It's ridiculous to me.
I tend not to blame the parents because, on one hand, these are the same people. On one hand, we could blame them. I'll say it like this, because these are some of the same public school parents, some of them, remember we're talking about hundreds of thousands of them just in Jefferson County alone, some of them are the ones who are out there electing the Obamas and the Holders and those people, and some of them don't vote at all, so some are very uninformed, but other ones are just working two and three jobs to get by, and their kids can't be in a neighborhood school because they had to ride a bus all day. I mean, I think we should start an over-under pull on how many school buses we have in wrecks every day because they have to go all the way across the county, which is ridiculous.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt about that, and that's something that we really have to consider.
Yeah, what I was going to say is, again, the left-wingers need to get on the same page, because if it's so important that we all wear seatbelts, and so important that we save energy, but we have kids getting up at the crack of dawn, and they're getting on buses with no seatbelts and riding all the way across town, wasting all that gas, I mean, it would be a lot easier, a lot more economically feasible if they could at least go to a school within a 2 or 3 mile radius.
Well, there's no doubt. And we actually do have a Senate bill after now. I'm trying to think of the number. I'm wanting to say Senate Bill 90. I may be wrong. But, you know, that's part of what's going on now is, you know, they're starting to look at neighborhood schools more. In Kentucky, it'll never pass because we're just that backwards. But
well,
you know,
it's a feel-good story for people. It's really easy to say, well, are you against kids staying in school? Are you for kids dropping out of school? And that's the way they word it. Just like when we had that phony federal crimes against women or whatever it was, domestic abuse, it's really easy to say, well, are you against having more laws against domestic violence? It's always worded because who can be against this? But the bottom line is I'm against the government telling us what we can do with our damn kids' bodies.
And I'm in total agreement with that. This is a parent responsibility and a local school decision. It has absolutely nothing to do with the government whatsoever. Senate Bill 176 is trying to get charter schools. Senate Bill 90, I believe the number is, I may be wrong, is trying to get neighborhood schools. So we're trying to do everything we can, and interestingly enough, these bills are sponsored by Republicans, so you know how that goes. But we're trying to do different things because we obviously clearly know that since the advent of Kira, since the advent of busing back in the 70s, that our school system has gotten progressively worse. It has not gotten any better. It's going to continue getting worse, and we're not doing anything to address the problem except forcing our teachers to deal with problem students, and we're not allowing them to deal with them anyway.
Oh, I agree. I mean, with Kira,
it's no sense.
Yeah, I barely avoided Kira. I got out of school right before they put that crap in. I always joked that Kira stood for the Communist Educational Redistribution Act.
Yeah, it really is. It really is.
I mean, Kentucky, look how poor Kentucky is there. We see how there's no jobs in Kentucky. The same Democrat hacks like Dumbo Stumbo and Papaw Bashir. The same, and I'm sorry, it's Democrat hacks this time. Next show we might be picking on Republican hacks. But the same Democrat hacks that don't want us to have hemp to create jobs also don't want the poor kids' parents to be able to send their children to a better school.
I'm in total agreement with you.
We're a poor state. We need choices. And like I said, 86% of states have some sort of charter schools because we know if you're a rich kid, your parents probably not send you to the government school. Your parents send you to where you're actually going to get an education. So the poor
kids get
screwed again.
Well, that's exactly it. They did get screwed. But poor kids.
Poor kids and White House interns. They all take it in the ass. <like Democrats.
laughs> Poor kids and poor adults get screwed. Because I tell you, you mentioned a minute ago about the military. How many kids getting their education while in the military?
Yep.
I'm curious about something because this is a weird situation for me. There was a story that came out yesterday that says funding for tuition assistance to military members in the Army, Air Force, Marines have been stopped because of these so-called sequester is causing these federal budget cuts. Now, here's the question for me, and I want somebody to answer this honestly for me. Andy's back on the line. Maybe he can answer it. But you know, a lot of these guys join the military for education. They are promised as part of their contract education assistance to further their education in college and everything else. If the government has just refused to honor that commitment that they agreed to in their contract in writing, do these guys still have a valid contract to be members of the military, or can they all just walk away? And if they do, if they can, we would lose 80% of our military tomorrow, would we not? Andy,
that'd be a good start.
Yeah,
I want to hear your thoughts on that because I find that very intriguing.
It depends on what particular educational bill you under. The old GI bill, the Vietnam era bill. It's a lot of guys still going to school with that, but if they had like a 10-year time to start this school, then I went under what they call the MacArthur bill. And matter of fact, I could have joined 90 days sooner, but I would, you know, hey, wasn't on straight, didn't think about it. But that was that bill back in the 70s was they would put in, you know, like for every dollar you put in, they would put in like two.
Right.
Kind of like a 401k situation. Now,
it's the same thing I was in the early 80s. Yeah, the Veep. Go ahead.
Yeah, you and I were under the same bill, that MacArthur bill. Now, this crap here, but see, this is the problem, Ed, is we know once you join the military, your civil rights and your constitutional rights become suspended.
To a degree.
Well, pretty much, 90% of it. You don't have to, I mean, because you're...
Well, here's the thing, though, Andy, but here's
the
thing.
You have a right to wear a pretty little blue beret and say you're with the United Nations.
Well, no, Andy is right. Andy is right for the most part. But here's my point of contention, and this is what I want service members who are listening to this show to think about. Here's my point of contention. Andy is right. When you join the military, you sign a contract. You can't sue Uncle Sam. There's different things that you cannot do. Okay. And by the way, I got to point this out. The neighborhood schools bill, I was saying might be Senate Bill 90, and I was wrong. It's actually Senate Bill 216. Our thanks to our good friend Paul Holligrover Stopper for putting that in the chat room. But here's the thing. That's a contractual obligation. You sign that piece of paper, so you're signing that away. You are giving up your right to sue Uncle Sam, but Uncle Sam is agreeing to give you education. When Uncle Sam says that we're no longer going to give you education, that we're going to stop paying for your education, then who violated the contract? At that point, you don't have an agreement legally, do you? You don't have a legal agreement.
I could see that with the guys that are out right now.
Mm-hmm.
The guys that are out right now got a legitimate argument.
Mm-hmm.
But the guys that are in, like when I was in the Navy, you could take college campuses, take college courses on the boat, right?
Right.
You still got a lot of people taking classes, but are they going? But will they get, you know, will they get paid for it? No. If you don't ask to do these guys right now with all this technology they got, Skype and all that,
mm-hmm.
they're going to school all the time. But the thing is, that's going to affect the guys that are out. And the guys that are like in the Army Reserve and stuff, they're going
mm-hmm.
to school part-time and doing their reserve time, that's who that's going to affect.
It's going to affect the guys that are doing it through Skype and online classes too, though, Andy, because those classes have to be paid for, and the federal government's not going to pay for them anymore. So if they're not going to pay for the classes and they agree to pay for your classes, they just broke the contract. And if you're in the military right now, you should walk away. You no longer have a contract. If you don't want to be there and you're just filling out your term because of your obligation because you signed that piece of paper is nothing more than a piece of paper now. It's not a contract. The government just broke the contract.
And, Ed, let's think about it. The fact is, from what I know, a lot of people, at least for the last 20 years, have gone to the military for that exclusive reason, to help pay for their school. Before we went into the never-ending war in 2001,
mm-hmm.
there were a lot of people I knew and grew up with who had never knew of us being in a real war, if you will, quote-unquote. And when I was at U of L in the early 90s, I went to school with a lot of guys who had been Marines over in Beirut in the 80s.
So that's how
they got to pay for their school. So think about this, gentlemen. This might be from my conspiracy hat here talking, but if you get rid of all the money that pays when the kids go to college, we're not cutting back on the empire building around the world, but if we cut back on paying for these kids to go in the military, yes, that means we're going to have fewer volunteers, and I guess that means it'll lead to a draft.
See, man, you're making too much sense now. Let's go back to the phones. Our 805 number, you're on the air. What can we do for you?
It's Mayo.
Mayo, how are you, sir?
Mayo.
Yeah. I don't know when you went in, Ed, but when I went in, 85 into the Navy, Hayes Gray and underweight, they had canceled Beef but hadn't started the new GI Bill. So our option was we could buy $50 savings bonds for like $17 or something if we wanted to for college.
Right.
And that whole time, but you didn't get like retroactive, you know, put on the new GI Bill or anything if you joined between whatever year and a half period it was.
Right.
So,
well, with us, I joined in 83, from 83 to 87, and I was locked into the VEAP program, the Veterans Education Assistance Program is what they called it. I guess it's still the same thing today or same program, but at that point, Andy's right. At that time, we contributed $1. The military contributed too, and when we got out of the service, we could use that money towards our education. So that was part of the plan. Now, of course, I was married, had a small family and everything else. I didn't have time for school, so I didn't get a chance to take advantage of that. But I also didn't contribute to it. I voluntarily did not contribute to it because I knew with my family I wouldn't be able to use it. But these guys are going in, and that's part of the appeal. I mean, nobody gets rich in the military, so these guys are being told, hey, you're not going to get a hell of a lot of money, but we're going to pay for your education so you can better yourself and you can get a real job when you get out. I mean, it's basically that simple. These recruiters have used this as a tool for years. And once again, Uncle Sam says, hey, you know what? We're not going to pay for your education now. Sorry, Mr. Veteran, who put your life on the line in Iraq and Afghanistan. Sorry, Mr. Veteran, who lost your leg, who lost your arm, who lost your nads. Sorry, Mr. Veteran, because we horribly disfigured your face because you took a roadside bomb to it. We're just not going to worry about your education anymore because we're too damn lazy to do our job and balance the budget and do what we promised to do. It's that simple. So,
and like I said, if you keep taking away the money to pay for the tuition, the main reason kids go into the military these days, I don't think too many of them are going in because they really want to see Iraq or Afghanistan this summer. And if you take away the pay for these military guys to go to school, that's why I said it plays right back into my conspiracy hat. You can read stories out there. You know, go do a start page search about military draft. There's a lot of newspapers
mm-hmm.
and mainline globalist publications that have been talking about how it's time for a draft.
Oh, there's all kinds of people talking about that. And quite frankly, you know, I used to really not have a problem with the draft because, quite frankly, I think a lot of kids today could use the discipline that comes from the military because they're not getting discipline anywhere else. However, at the same time, I can't say that I necessarily agree with the draft today because our foreign policy is so screwed up. It's not like we're protecting our borders. We want to send kids halfway across the world to protect somebody else's. And, you know, when you get into this whole education thing with the veterans, this is really disturbing because yesterday the Senate Democrats put out their first budget in 4 years, folks. Senate Democrats put out their first budget in 4 years. Now, we know all spending is supposed to originate in the House, but the Senate Democrats put out their first budget in 4 years. This didn't address anything. What it included was $1 trillion in new taxes that wouldn't balance the budget. $1 trillion in new taxes, folks. And if they're going to get all this money and they still can't pay education, we've got a problem.
I agree. I agree to Harley. On that head, I mean, these politicians, again, they talk about a draft, and I guess the best thing I think I've seen on a bumper sticker, I fought with this theory a long time ago, the whole, you know, support the troops but not the war kind of thing, because, you know, the neocons and the hawks, the Juan McCains of the world, mm-hmm. they were all big on, oh, you got to support the troops and the war. Well, my favorite bumper sticker I saw last week here in Louisville, it says support the troops and bring them home because we'll need them to fight against our own government.
Well, there's no doubt about it. And it's fascinating, too, because, you know, as part of this Democrat budget plan, and this is hilarious, you know, it was actually unveiled by the Senate Budget Committee Chairwoman Patty Murray. She's a Democrat out of Washington. Please get rid of her. She's stupid. It rocks. But, you know, this plan is supposedly a $975 billion of spending cuts. It's supposed to include that. But unfortunately, it doesn't, because $240 billion in savings is because they're projecting the end of the Afghanistan war, so we won't have to pay for that war no more. $242 billion is in reduced interest payments we're going to have anyway. So you're talking about, you know, half a trillion dollars, which is half of what they say their spending cuts is already going to happen. It's not a spending cut at all. And then you're increasing taxes $1 trillion. So, you know, we're not doing anything to address the problem. We're not doing one damn thing to fix education, all the problems we really have over here. We're still playing accounting gimmicks. We're still playing games with all of these things that aren't going to do any good for us at all. You know, I don't get it. I don't get it. Murray is trying to say that, you know, they have a $2.4 trillion in deficit reduction from the last Congress, and with hers on top of that, it's going to be about a $4 trillion deficit reduction plan, and, you know, they're going to be able to get Obama and Alan Simpson and all these other people on board with this. You know, I hope they do go on board with this because it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Well, if the Dems are the party of the minorities, how is this going to affect all of the people, you know, who are a minority, whether Latino or African-American, et cetera, that do join the military for an education just for that reason? Why aren't they, you know?
Explain to me why we've got a $3.8 trillion budget every year, and this so-called sequester is just literally breaking the bank for $80 billion, because that's all it amounts to. $80 billion out of a $3.8 trillion budget, and they've got to cut veterans' education. We can't cut $80 billion. That's like me cutting $2 a week.
No, I think Mayo's onto a good point about the politicians and the minorities. If anything, look at the government officials. You can make the argument, it might sound hyperbolic, but you can make the argument that they hate black children because they want all the abortions possible. We see the most abortions occur in the black community, so they don't want the black children to be born. And then once the black children are born, they don't want you to have charter schools. They want you to send your kids to the same old government indoctrination camp, so they don't want them to have primary school. And then once they get out of school, they don't want the hemp for the jobs, so they can't have jobs. So then they're forced into the military, like Mayo says, and now they don't want to pay for the government education after they get out of the military.
I got news for you, man. You're making a lot of sense. It's one of the biggest reasons that I get so involved in West End issues here in Louisville. West End is predominantly black.
Republican in the West End.
West End is predominantly black in Louisville, and they continue electing the Democrats. The Democrats are the ones that have been screwing them forever. The liberals have. And by the way, folks, Meshawn Daniels had mentioned a Louisville Magazine article. There is now a link in the chat room to that. Thanks once again to our good friend Paul Holliger over at Stop Invisible Taxes. He put the link in there for you guys. And I'll be quite honest with you, I'm looking forward to reading this. When Meshawn recommends an article like that, it's worth reading. I promise you that. But, you know, the West End here in Louisville is ripe. It is ripe with problems. And it's all because of the asinine way that our government officials continue treating the African-American element here in Louisville and in Kentucky. And indeed across the nation. Everybody thought that Barack Obama was going to be this first black president and he was going to take care of these things. Open your eyes, people. What has he done? Has he accomplished anything or done one thing for racial equality in education, for racial equality in the economy, for racial equality in anything other than talk. He has not done one thing. He can use executive orders to try to get your guns, but he can't use executive orders to fix those infallacies and those injustices. Now, I don't live with white guilt. My good friend Andy Hodges absolved me of that. But, you know, you got to think about this. It really is very telling, isn't it, Dale?
Oh, it's very telling. Like Ed says, we joke that that they absorbed you for your white guilt, and I'm the fighting Irish Protestant. I never did give a damn. But I mean, you look at all this together, and again, it's all by design. And again, we talk about what the government officials are doing, and where are the people going to get the jobs? They don't want them to have a chance in this life. They keep electing them, and I say they. I include the West End because they look at the short term. They elect them because they give them a fish rather than teach them how to fish, and that's what we've seen with all these vote buying in the West End for so long in Kentucky. That's how back when. Flipper Patton was governor, Governor Paul Flipper Patton. He only won because of the West End of Louisville. We saw if the election had been decided in the 1995 governor's election, if it had been decided with 119 and a half counties, Larry Foree would have become governor. But that one half, called the western half of Louisville, allowed Flipper Patton to become governor. Why did they keep voting? You always ask the big questions here, Ed, but why did they keep voting for the ones who could keep putting chains on their ankles?
Because these guys keep promising things that they never deliver on, and they always live with that promise. Andy, I can't wait to hear you weigh in on this. Go ahead, my friend.
Hey, man, look, guys, I told you, man, most of my people were zombies, man, zombies and addicts. Because 2 weeks ago, this situation came up, well, actually a month ago, when they was talking about this educational genocide, and the guys at Justice Resource Center, they was losing their mind. Huh? What's going on here? And we need to hold somebody accountable. And they almost said the Democrat. What has happened with the Democratic Party? But you know what they did? They made a sharp right and called, and they went back to their old ways and said the devil is Mitch McConnell. One white man is literally holding up the black progress in the state of Kentucky in 2013.
We won't argue with them too much on the McConnell part. We just want them to look to Senator Rand Paul, our other senator.
Yeah,
you know, Andy, you know what's really fascinating about that?
Okay, the black. Okay, like I said, I know you guys are newsworthy, I don't even listen to Roland Martin much, but I was flipping through and caught about 15 minutes of him Sunday, and I had these black gay advocates on there, two guys and a woman. And they were talking about how the LGBT is fundamentally middle class white racist.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, and you know, we talked about on here how, you know, this whole thing with political correctness and the homosexuals have pretty much hijacked the civil rights bus, and because they're trying to say, well, being gay is like being black. I'm like, in what universe did that happen, you know?
Right.
But, you know, the Democratic Party, I got to give them credit for one thing. They don't fight a conventional war, but they are the masters of guerrilla warfare. And that whole thing, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, is true, because none of these groups, as a general rule, would hang out with each other unless they smelt blood in the water.
Andy, the best example I can give you, Andy, what's really sad and tragic about Louisville, being somebody who's lived here just about 100% of my life, is do you remember the name Alan Keyes?
Sure.
Yeah. Alan Keyes was a gentleman, a former UN ambassador under Ronald Reagan, and he ran for president. Most people didn't know who he was because he basically got arrested when he tried to get into a Republican primary debate with George W. Bush and John McCain. But Alan Keyes is the guy who I voted for in the 2000 primary. And Alan Keyes came to Louisville, and what was sad is Alan Keyes filled up Southeast Christian Church with a ton of people paying money to come see him, but yet they took him out to, I think, Shawnee Park, and they couldn't get 10 or 12 people to come see him.
Right.
Look.
And he's black, if people don't know that about Alan Keyes.
Well, we're actually running out of time, guys, so we're going to wrap this up pretty quick. You know, one thing I do want to point out, Andy, you know, you mentioned, you know, people are either addicts and everything else in the West End. Where is the biggest problem? Where is the biggest problem in Louisville for drugs?
It depends on what kind of drug you're talking about.
Let's do this different then. Let's forget about the drug of choice. What population in Louisville has the biggest drug problem?
White people.
White people have the biggest drug problem because they like cocaine and stuff. But we don't hear about that. What we hear about it is the things in the West End. If we're to believe the media that the West End is so bad and everybody is an addict or a zombie, as you point out, you know, then we also have to look at the reality of what's really going on. We're already already making the black population suffer economically. We're making them suffer education. So now we're feeding them crack and everything else to keep these guys addicts and so hyped up on drugs that that's their only thought process, so they don't think about what's really happening to them. It's a really interesting contradiction. I was talking about
Democratic addicts. We're addicted to the Democratic Party.
I understand what you're talking about, but I'm talking about the reality of what you see on the news every night. All right. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Mayo. Dale, time to wrap, my friend. Final thoughts.
Well, final thoughts is, like I said, we talked a lot about the economic aspect of education and the fact that these kids don't get a choice in where they're going to school. And that's the bottom line. If we strip away the Democrat and the Republican in front of each politician's name, start asking them why you can't have more choices. You love to hear the left talk about choice, pro-choice, but they're not pro-choice when it comes to schools. And some on the right are starting to come around. So you got to be the change that you want to see in the world, to quote the ancient you-know-who. And in America, you have so many schools have fallen apart, and if they were businesses, they would have filed Chapter 11. They would have filed bankruptcy. They would have been gone. But because they're schools, they're allowed to stay open. And the way that happens, they just keep pushing and keep pushing the slave mentality, and you got to stand up against them and say death to the New World Order.
You know, I'm totally with you on that. It's interesting to me, though, because when we start looking at dynamics, we understand. You know, I'm in my 40s. Dale's awful close, if not there already. Okay, we understand at this age that you have to have education, you have to have a purpose, and we all have a role in life to play. But at 16, 17, and 18 years old, we really didn't know those things. This is stuff that comes with life experience as you get older and as you learn. You know, education in Kentucky is bad, and it's bad for a reason. Our lawmakers continue muddying the process. They want to continue ignoring the reality that charter schools make a difference. They want to continue ignoring the reality that neighborhood schools actually worked better than this busing plan and the CURA programs that they have tried to tweak for at least 30 to 40 years now. We know these things, and we're still fighting over the same problem. We know that the federal government is not going to do anything to help us. We know that the state of Kentucky, especially the Jefferson County School Board, is about as corrupt as it gets. We know these things. But we, the people, have all the power. My good friend Andy just told us about, you know, the West End and the Justice Resource Center. And because they couldn't go all the way and say, hey, it's the Democrats' fault, they tried to turn to the right and blame one white guy, as he said, Mitch McConnell. One man doesn't make all the decisions, folks. We have an elected body. The House of Representatives has a Democratic majority in Washington. In Kentucky, we have the same thing. Here in Louisville, our local elections, our metro council is predominantly Democrat. So from the top of the chain to the bottom of the chain, we have the Democrats who control all the spending and are supposed to be making the decisions to help those less fortunate than us. And what have they done with that? It takes $50,000 to buy votes in the West End. I'm not kidding about that. It takes $50,000 minimum to buy votes in the West End. When you want to become elected mayor, you take $50,000 in cash, you sprinkle it around a couple of people, and they go out and make sure you get elected. But the West End is one of the most economically challenged areas in Louisville, Kentucky, and they're not alone. They're not alone. Throughout this nation, we can go to every inner city and find some serious problems and some serious racial disparity. Now, I'm not turning this into a white-black thing. What I'm doing is turning this into a political establishment thing against we the people. If you want to get ahead, you've got to make changes. So for people that are being oppressed, whether you're poor, white, poor, black, poor, Mexican, or poor, insert name here, you've got to get involved in the process to make that change. You can no longer allow yourself to sit back and be victimized. Because a victim is only a victim if they don't know the difference. on this show, we tell you what the difference is. Now, you can't claim ignorance anymore. Now, all you can claim is laziness if you don't get involved in your own life to make those changes. That's it for tonight. Dale, I don't have much time left for you, brother. So tomorrow night, folks, make sure you tune in to Dale the Truth right here on the TNT Thursday Night Truth Show at 7 o'clock. Dale will be here with his unique brand of politics, trust me. And then Sunday night at 7 o'clock with Ken Molman on Liberty Unbridled. We appreciate your listening. Thank you so much. Our numbers are going through the roof, and it's all because of you. So we appreciate it. Thanks a lot. Join in tomorrow night at 7 o'clock with Dale the Truth. Take care. Have a great night. Thank you.